Welcome to the Art of Procurement podcast. My name is Philip Heidson, a 20-year procurement practitioner, former head of procurement and advisor to procurement leaders around the world. I started Art of Procurement to help leaders and their teams access the resources they need to increase their impact through insight-driven procurement. You are listening to our flagship podcast where we pull back the curtain and shine a light on the strategies, tactics, and tools that leading procurement teams are using to align their impact with the needs of their business. And today on the show, I'm delighted to welcome Betsy Pancik and Conrad Snover from Procurability. I've known Betsy and Conrad for some time, and they're two of the leading authorities in the procurement space. Betsy has spent more than 20 years designing procurement operating models for companies such as IBM, Accenture, WNS Denali, and Procurability, while Conrad has more than 20 years of advisory and consulting experience focused on strategic procurement and supply chain management. Now, today's podcast is a recording of a recent AOP Live webinar, and it was on the topic that is probably closest to my heart of all the things we talk about here at Art of Procurement, and that is procurement operating model. So Betsy, Conrad, and I discuss the procurement operating models of the future. We answer your questions on procurement operating models, the impact on talent, and the integration of technology. And I start, as always, by asking Betsy and Conrad if they found procurement or if procurement found them. And let's kick things off by hearing from Betsy.
Procurement found me. I was an English major in college, so I'm not sure what that qualifies you to do except go back to school. So I was not really ready to do that right away and started looking around for a job and wound up getting a job managing subcontracts for an aerospace company. And that just kind of led to, you know, progressively different roles in procurement. But I sort of consider my growing up in procurement to have been at IBM. I was fortunate to be a part of their internal procurement team. And then I was also part of the team that really formulated some of the first procurement business process relationships. And, you know, so a lot of the way I view procurement is based a lot on what I learned there. And really, you know, that was a very mature procurement organization. So we were doing, you know, very different things in terms of how we measured value and the types of relationships we had with stakeholders and the way that we engaged with them on defining requirements and building budgets. So, you know, and I've spent really the last 10, 15-ish years in the procurement services world, kind of helping clients with making procurement awesome.
Yeah. Thanks, Betsy. And Conrad, I'm going to ask you the same question. How did you get involved in procurement?
Thanks, Phil. I would say, well, you know, for me, it's pretty simple as well. I started my career in procurement. My first job out of college was at A.T. Kearney Management Consulting in New York. And my first project there was in strategic sourcing, and A.T. Kearney was really the pioneer of strategic sourcing at scale. And so I gained a love of the operational and, you know, just very practical nature of the work. I took a little break after some of those first projects in sourcing where I did some financial restructuring and marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. And then I found my way back to procurement and joined Procurability, which was then called Denali in 2001. So that was a really, you know, strong foundational introduction to operations, procurement, and strategic sourcing. Mm-hmm. And I think from, you know, very early days in my career, just built my love for it. So it's what I've been doing ever since.
Now I got a starting question, which is really just around the topic, which we talked about, procurement operating models. And it's really to level set, because I always find definitions really important and they can lead to misunderstandings or misperceptions or whatever that may be. So just to help us level set today, what in your mind is a procurement operating model?
You know, the procurement operating model addresses what procurement does, how it does it, as well as the physical structure of the organization. So, you know, it's kind of interesting, Phil. Betsy and I talk about this all the time. You know, we want to, and we'll address today a little bit, I assume, because we talk about it all the time. The fact that we've been talking about these same topics of procurement operating model, procurement structuring, how to build procurement value, how to elevate procurement seat at the table, how to structure procurement, how to focus on, you know, lots of different topics around, you know, savings and building the value of procurement. Why have we been talking about those for 20 years?
Right.
And why are we still talking about them? And I think, you know, so my first I asked myself, is it a failure of change? And I don't think so. You know, procurement used to be order taking, very transactional, clerical, taking, purchasing requisitions, building contracts, maybe writing contracts for decisions that have already been made, but very transactional and clerical of nature, moving things from the inbox to the outbox. So like I just mentioned, for years, we've been talking about the challenge of making procurement more strategic and being less transactional. And I think we've been making strides. So I think one of the fundamental questions to think about is, why do we continue to talk about this? And I would say it's actually due to our own success, but also our failures. So now procurement as an enabler to the business has a much more important role. So that's a factor of our success. We've been able to demonstrate value through sourcing and category management, innovation and forward thinking activities to change the view of procurement across the organization. Procurement, I think, you know, one of the failures we need to address is, why is procurement so hard? Why does it take so long? Why do people not want to engage with procurement? So we do need to continue to talk about that, but we also need to recognize our successes and say that procurement is having these conversations because we are able to influence change, drive value, and enable the business. But to answer the question, back to your operating model question, you know, procurement is this complex ecosystem of processes and resources and tools that allow the business to buy the products they need. So I think one of our fundamental operating principles is that procurement is not an end to itself. Mm-hmm. Procurement is not a profit center. Procurement doesn't exist for procurement's sake.
Yeah.
Procurement exists to operate and support the business. So as long as we're supporting the business, building those relationships and driving value, it'll be continually more important for procurement to step up and deliver and enable the business success.
So one of the questions that we came in, and it's a question that I'm sure you hear all the time, and it's certainly a question that I hear a lot, is a question from Linda. You know, when you think about the procurement operating model, is the choice that we face centralized versus decentralized, you know, embedding in the business, or do you see a more dominant model that's kind of evolving?
You know, we continue to have these conversations. We do a lot of work with organizational structures, procurement transformations, procurement assessments and recommendations, strategic roadmaps, things of that nature. Very strategic procurement organizational structures. So we come across this question all the time. So it's very, very poignant and very topical, relevant for today. I think I would like to introduce, well, first, centralized and decentralized are still relevant concepts. In the old school, just so everybody is on the same page with some definitions, because I think that's important, like you did earlier, Phil, centralization is like, in the most extreme case, is all procurement resources sitting together in one area, in one office building, doing all the procurement related activities. Decentralization is, and reporting to the, you know, obviously sitting together and reporting to the same function. Decentralization is procurement basically supporting the business, reporting to the business. Maybe they're reporting to a plant or reporting to engineering. They're making their own purchasing decisions to support that function. Those are the two ends of the spectrum. And what we see is something in the middle is much more effective, typically and most common. It's called center-led, and it's the, you know, we call it hybrid centralization, center-led. I was kind of getting silly with terms the other day, and I was thinking of centralization enablement of decentralization. I mean, you can come up with any sort of crazy name you want, but the fundamental principle is that procurement needs to be run in a centralized, coordinated fashion while supporting the business.
Right.
Now, so let's click on that. Let's click down on that a little bit. So certain functions like category management, analytics, market intelligence, those shared services type functions that are shared across everybody, those should be centralized.
Yeah.
Other parts of the business and the function can be decentralized. Things that, you know, supporting the business, maybe it's you've got a plant procurement buyer that needs to make sure the parts are showing up on time. Maybe you've got regional contracts or whatever the case may be. Maybe you've got your procurement resources sitting with the business to make, you know, in their meetings and their staff meetings to make sure that their forecasts and plans are incorporated into your category strategy. That's the most efficient operating model, so that they're supporting the business while delivering the governance. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you decide, and how do you decide what to centralize and what to decentralize? You know, I think that is where the secret sauce it comes in with every single business is different. Every single industry is different. Every single business within every single industry is different. So it's going to be category driven. You might have national contracts or large contracts that are managed nationally. You might have regional contracts managed locally. Mm-hmm. It might be business unit driven. And those are the decisions that are going to drive procurement success. And that's the key to getting this right, to basically driving that governance and enabling the decentralized support. So for resources, let's talk resources and how resources can fit that model. We're seeing a big trend towards this with hybrid procurement organizations using a resource model that supports this center-led concept. So it could be a combination of full-time resources. It could be contract and on-demand resources. For example, for strategic sourcing, for special projects, or special category expertise that you don't want to, they're very expensive to buy a category expert and have them staff on in-house all the time when you do a project every 3 years. Doesn't make any sense to staff that person. Just use a contractor or a consultant. It also allows managed services or outsourcing. It also facilitates automation when you can centralize those functions. So this hybrid model will support what we see as emerging the procurement resource model of the future. Look, in the last year and a half, we've all seen this, right? Every single person probably in this webinar worked from home. And it worked fine. It turned out it worked okay. So if you can work for procurement and then be seated in your business, you know you can do your job successfully. Yep. If you can be seated in your house, in your home office like I am today, and still do procurement, then you know that you can do it successfully and this works. And that also facilitates these more creative resource models as well.
Yeah, you know, that's definitely where we see as well, kind of as you're thinking about that model and you think of, you know, the business partnering side of things. That's where you really want to get embedded into the business, because you want to be in those meetings with your stakeholders. You want to be seen as the person they pick up the phone to whenever, or send the email to whenever they have questions about suppliers. You want to be proactive in sharing all the data and the insights you have. But as you said, you don't necessarily have the bandwidth to place an expert in, to have somebody who has that expert knowledge for every category to bring to the table. But as long as you're being that, we call it kind of an architect, you know, you're kind of architecting this ecosystem of expertise behind the scenes, which can come from a shared service center, or it can come externally, to bring in that to your stakeholder and manage that interaction as being something that's really powerful, and that more and more organizations are starting to at least think about.
I think just maybe one more quick point that I'll add to that as well, sorry, is that, you know, I think regardless of what operating model different companies are looking at, and you know, we can certainly, a lot of people ask, you know, well, what's the right operating model for my industry? And there are some nuances to that. But I think, you know, the most important thing is that you have a good, clear understanding of how you align with the business, because whether you have a shared services model or a center of expertise or, you know, a pool of generalists to kind of, you know, do some of those back office things, if you don't get the stakeholder alignment piece right, all the rest of that stuff kind of doesn't matter. So, right. You know, typically when we're looking at operating models, we're really looking at those stakeholder engagement roles first. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then the rest of it kind of flows from there. And that's something that I think a lot of companies sometimes don't, they sort of do that in a different order. Like they focus first on, let's think about all the stuff we can centralize. Yep. And it's like, no, let's think first about how we're going to meet the business and what we need to do to effectively engage them.
Yeah, generate demand for the rest of the team, exactly. Ultimately. You know, as you think about the last year or so, have you seen any impact on the thinking about procurement operating models?
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously complete and utter disruption. You know, last year it was, you know, bikes and fishing poles and, you know, camping equipment and things like that. You know, this year it's semiconductors. So, you know, supply chains have been just completely disrupted and all over the place. You know, I think last year really proved that we don't need to be, you know, with our stakeholders to effectively engage with them. Mm-hmm. You know, as a procurement services provider, I mean, we saw our business explode, you know, kind of much to our own surprise. But I think in some ways it was because people said, well, wait a minute, I don't need to have everybody right here with me. So now I can be a little bit more flexible in the way I approach the resources side of my operating model. And so that, you know, I think that's been a big impact. And, you know, we think that last year's experience will cause more procurement organizations to kind of think in that hybrid way, and that maybe some of the activities that they thought were, you know, could only be done by mm-hmm. an in-house procurement team, you know, that they are starting to examine the market and see, you know, what different service providers have to offer. So, I mean, I think that, yeah, certainly, you know, we figured out we can deliver procurement remotely. We don't have to be co-located. The one thing I will say is, you know, interestingly, I was having a conversation with a client not that long ago, and he was telling me, you know, we're getting ready to make plans to go back to the office. And we've been told that procurement is going to stay remote. And I said, well, how do you feel about that? Do you think that's a good thing? And he's like, well, from a quality of life standpoint, I think people are used to this. They prefer being at home. And he's like, but, you know, I'm worried that it's going to be out of sight, out of mind. And mm-hmm. that, you know, we're going to kind of, you know, we're going to lose some of the ground that we've gained by being there for our stakeholders, you know, over right. the last year or so. And that once they start to get back together in person, we're going to, you know, we're going to lose that linkage. So I think that's something, you know, to think about as we emerge and, you know, companies start thinking about going back to on-site offices.
Now, Kelly, I'm going to come to you in a moment because I do see there's some questions coming in. But before I do, I want to just kind of build on something that you said earlier, and Betsy and Conrad, you both kind of alluded to this, where the difference is that, like, the secret sauce is how do you apply this kind of model in different industries or in different situations. And I just wonder if either of you really can share what are some of the flags that you look for that help determine how to deploy a certain model in a certain industry or a certain situation? You know, what are the things that you go in and look for off the bat that helps you make a determination that we think that this approach may be better than another approach?
Yeah, I've spent a lot of time in financial services, and financial services is a bit of a different animal procurement wise, because you don't really have that hard delineation between direct and indirect spend. Mm-hmm. You know, so if I'm buying, you know, market research, well, is that marketing? Is it professional services? You know, if I'm buying predictive analytics, is that IT? Is it services? You know, the consumers, the end user, they don't think in terms of categories. They think right. in terms of, I've got a business need and I work within a line of business. So I think specifically within the financial services world, a more relationship aligned model and a more line of business aligned model makes a lot of sense. And you can still have the category teams in the background, you know, mm-hmm. to make sure you're leveraging your spend and you're, you know, getting the value of your full volume. But, you know, having that front person, that point person, be aligned at the line of business level, you know, creates a much lower bar for engagement. And that's what we want, right? We want people to be able to get into the procurement process as quickly and easily as possible. So I think for financial services, you know, aligning at the line of business level within your operating model makes a lot of sense. You know, and you kind of contrast that with, you know, manufacturing heavy industries, you know, consumer products, industrial manufacturing. You know, in those organizations, I mean, supply chain really rules. So, you know, and supply chain thinks in terms of products, they think in terms of plants, you know, products are made up of components. So in those types of models, you know, having a very solid, solidly constructed organization focused at the category level makes much more sense. Because again, you know, it's not so much about, oh yeah, I need somebody that can really help me define my requirements. I know what I need. Mm-hmm. I just need somebody to help me go get it for the best price, the best value, the best quality, and usually like yesterday. So I think, you know, there's different industries that can drive different models. And obviously, you know, when you start to to layer in the technology piece of this, it also becomes more complex because, you know, certain technology tools are not as well organized for services. Others are not as well organized for, you know, inventory type models. So I think that's another layer that can, you know, where the industry can really play a big factor.
Mm-hmm. Comrade, I just want to open it to you if you had anything, any other thoughts to add.
Yeah, two more examples of that. The example that I had in mind when I was answering your previous question about the hybrid centralization or center-led is, mm-hmm. was hospitality and entertainment with, you know, an industry that's where it's common that you would have multiple properties across the United States, for example. One of our clients, we have several clients in that industry, and they'll have properties literally in every state and, 40, 50, 60 properties, regional hubs and central, you know, kind of regional centralization and then center-led procurement. And that's exactly how that works. So, you know, towels, linens, cups, that's all centralized.
Yeah.
Shrimp is probably bought locally in the Southeast. Mm-hmm. So there's no reason for the Northeast or the West Coast to buy shrimp for the Southeast, right?
Yeah.
So kind of a good example of that. Another example is energy. Energy and utilities, for example, that what we see is more shift towards centralization, mostly because those businesses are more regionally controlled.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, a utility company would operate within a geographic footprint. And yep. So within that, like, you're not going to have people in, I'm in California, so I'll use myself as an example. You're not going to have your centralization in California, and then there's nobody in Florida because the utility operates in California. Yep. And so in that example, you'll have regional hubs or regional offices, maybe the engineering office is in a different town. And so you'll support procurement that way. Procurement will support the business mm-hmm. that way.
Kelly, I want to come over to you and just see if we've got any questions to pose to Betsy and Conrad from the listeners so far.
We have, as a matter of fact, and two of them really jump out at me as sort of being natural extensions of what we've already discussed. So Conrad, let me start with you on this first one, and then Betsy, I'll give you a chance to add your thoughts as well. So Conrad, Amy is asking on this topic of stakeholder engagement, should procurement's internal stakeholders know anything about what procurement's operating model is, what the intent of the model is, what it's been designed around, or from sort of a customer experience standpoint, should it just work to them? Is there any benefit in them understanding that a procurement operating model has been deliberately designed for some reason?
That's a very interesting question. I don't think I've ever had that one, but I love it because it resonates with so many things, so many of my own personal philosophies, like, you shouldn't care how I do this. I just do a great job, right? And to one of the concepts we mentioned earlier about hybrid centralization or resource models or how resources are used, managed services, et cetera. Betsy and I both touched on this. This, you know, that's an exact example of this. So if I take an intake request, one of my stakeholders needs something, and I provide and I look at it and I determine that that should be executed by somebody who's offshore or overseas or offsite somewhere, near shore, wherever it is, why should the stakeholder care? The only thing that they care about is that we responded very quickly and accurately, and we gave them great value. We didn't make them wait, and we didn't give them a low quality solution. So I would argue that at some level, they shouldn't care as long as we're meeting their needs. I hate to say this, right? But the answer to your question, Kelly, I think is it depends. So in my first example, the stakeholder is a user, like, I don't know, somebody, a field engineer or somebody in a plant, right? They need something. They don't care who does it as long as it's done right. But as soon as it's done wrong, as soon as there's a problem, then they're going to care. Right. And so if they knew that service was being provided to them at half the cost, they might be a little more understanding if it took a little bit longer. Yeah. It was like some English problems and some grammar problems in the writing of the documents, or they might not care. I think we all know. I think everybody here would probably say they probably don't care. They just want it done right because their world is to keep the lights on, to keep the plant running, to keep the business going. and they don't want to save $7 on that transaction if it gives them a 2-week delay in their need. So I think they do care. And if you go in with the philosophy that I started with, which is they don't care, then you have to be perfect. You have to be, have flawless execution so that they don't know, and so that they don't, you don't build them a case to care.
Sure.
Can I just add something, Kelly, that I think is important? That we shouldn't be making them figure out where to go either. Right. Some of the times we over-engineer this and make it so complex that, you know, if a deal looks like this, you go there. And if a deal looks like that, you go there. And if the deal is like under a certain amount, you do something else. That complexity that we build leads to a really poor customer experience. So they never know where to go. And oftentimes they won't go anywhere because they'll just go and do it themselves because it's easier. So it's something that I just wanted to jump in, Conrad, and add to what you were saying that I think is really important.
Yeah,
spot on. I totally agree. You know, we've had websites. We've actually helped companies build intake websites for procurement, right? So it would be on the intranet. So yourcompany.procurement.com, right? And on your intranet, it's like, oh, I need to buy a stapler. How do I do that? And you like have to click through this category hierarchy, and you have to find out if it's on catalog or not. And like, it's crazy. It's totally crazy. It doesn't work at all. They just need something. They need something fast. They need high level of service.
Yeah. Thanks, Kelly. I'll let you pop back in with the other question you had.
Sure. And Betsy, maybe then let me come to you with this question. So this is actually a completely different question coming in from Cedric, and he's interested about the role of either tech enablement or emerging technologies in sort of designing out these procurement operating models. So what he's asking is tech enablement enabling the procurement operating model to evolve, or would you say it is creating pressure, say through consumerization of the internal buying process, forcing procurement to change their operating model? So is it giving procurement an opportunity to evolve, or is it pushing procurement to stay ahead of the technology? What's your take on that?
I honestly think it's both. I have like a few soapbox things that I, you know, where I jump up on my soapbox as it relates to procurement, and the use of tech to kind of solve procurement operating problems or procurement process problems is one of those issues. And, you know, so I do think that technology, especially in the last, even just 3 to 4 years, has advanced so significantly. You know, we're automating processes we never thought that could be done by machines. And so I do think that has pushed procurement a bit to say, okay, well, what really is the value that we bring to the process, and how can we utilize these tools in order to streamline and, you know, simplify the process? And again, like I said before, I mean, the whole, you know, objective here is to make it as easy as possible for people to engage in the process. And I'm a firm believer that means compliance has to be easier than non-compliance. So by utilizing tools, you can definitely, you know, you can help evolve your procurement operating model and show your stakeholders, see, look, we're trying to bring you these capabilities that maybe allow more of a self-service model, maybe allow you to, you know, engage 24/7. While at the same time still maintaining, you know, those business stakeholder relationships so that you can continue to get ahead of requirements and that you're not just, you know, then kind of falling back into the old ways of being an order taker. So I think that the technical capabilities, again, especially, you know, when you think about over the last 3 to 4 years, have evolved so significantly that I do think that they're pushing procurement in some ways to kind of justify itself and come up with an operating model that says, okay, these are the activities that we think are really, really important to be done by people, and to not only be done by people, but to be done as close to you as possible, you know, and then kind of going different layers down, you know, these are the activities maybe that can be centralized, but should still be people-based. These are the activities we're going to automate. And the last thing I'll say about this is, you know, I've seen a lot of companies pour a lot of money into technology and they don't see a penny of benefit. They get no ROI. And, you know, fundamentally, like I said before, tech can't fix a bad process. So if you are considering digital transformation, and I love that all the providers in this space have completely jumped on that phrase, because everybody wants to be digital now. So they're all kind of reinvigorating their business base by calling it digital procurement. That, you know, if you are considering that, I always tell people, look at your underlying process first, because if all you're doing is enabling a bad process in the system, you're going to wind up with the same issues. So I think as much as tech can help us push the operating model, can help us evolve the operating model, it's not a panacea. It's not going to all of a sudden, you know, fix a bunch of process problems and make people want to engage.
No, definitely not. And Conrad, did you want to add anything to that while we give Betsy a minute to stow her soapbox comfortably for the rest
more.
Of the
I've yeah. got more. I'm waiting for them to come up.
Yeah, I have one other perspective on this. It's not a different perspective. It's maybe just a detail on one of Betsy's early concepts about how technology can enable the technology tools we have today can enable procurement in ways that we didn't think possible. And let me just give you an example. So about 10 years ago, we built a Maverick spend dashboard that basically would take category by category, region by region, and show compliant versus non-compliant spend. So when somebody bought off the contract, it was compliant. When they bought something from a different supplier within that category that was not one of the preferred suppliers, it would be flagged as non-compliant. And we would take these reports to each stakeholder and say, hey, look, your organization is, you know, bought, you know, here's your behavior, here's your spending patterns. Let's do some communication and change management to make sure that everybody understands the preferred contracts, the preferred suppliers, so that we get the value that procurement created by writing these amazing contracts that we all sourced. That was pretty tedious. So we had to build this like complex dashboard. We had to have all this logic and algorithms to flag whether spend was compliant or not. Then we had to take this dashboard to, I think, like 20 different stakeholders on a regular basis, quarterly or monthly. And then that stakeholder would say, geez, well, you should talk to, you know, Jose in operations. And because look, his group is doing this. And so each one of those meetings would spurn a dozen sub meetings. And after doing this a while, the CPO said, can you build me something that prevents this from happening? And we couldn't. During that time, Ariba P2P was the most sophisticated platform and they were an early adopter of that. And there was no functionality. And we didn't have the tools, AI, and our, it was basically, it's a machine learning type solution that didn't exist back then. And so if you think about the evolution of spend analysis, which is really what this is, spend analysis is historical. Like, how much did I spend? Did I spend? How much did I spend? How much did I spend with which suppliers? How much did I spend with which group? How much did I spend on contract? That's interesting, but it's not actionable immediately. I mean, it's actionable from a strategic and category management perspective, but it's not immediately actionable. So now we have these AI tools where we can say, hey, don't buy that from this person, buy it from this person. Don't buy that item from the supplier, buy it from that supplier. So you have AI tools embedded into the purchase requisition process to avoid Maverick spending, so that the buyer or the requisitioner gets flagged and notified while they're making a purchase decision, if in a decentralized supported business and operating environment. And if there's a approval process that can also have logic and algorithms and learning behind it to say, hey, before you approve this, you should know that we have a contract for something very similar. And then you can look and say, no, that's not similar. And you can teach the machine to make a more intelligent decision next time. So it's a very fun time right now.
Excellent. Thank you, Conrad.
Thanks. And we could jump into those questions some more, I'm sure. It's actually fascinating, as you say, about the technology. And one thing that I want to encourage folks, I completely agree with you, Betsy, in terms of, you know, technology isn't that silver bullet. And the amount of times you see organizations think, we're going to bring in this technology and it's going to fix everything. You know, I think 100% of the companies that take that approach are disappointed when they've spent all the money and 3 years later, yeah, Nothing has really changed. on the flip side is embrace it. You know, this technology, as you were saying, Conrad, can really be a game changer if you use it in the right way. And don't fear it, because that's something that you often see is fearing this new technology, because mm-hmm. you know, folks might look at that and say, well, what's that going to do for my role? Well, actually, if you actually embrace it and be one of the drivers of change and the catalyst for this technology, you can reshape what you do. You can reshape the impact that procurement has, and you're the one that's in control of that conversation, versus if you let it happen to you, you might be the one that doesn't really have control of that conversation and maybe the one that's negatively impacted. So I'm always really encouraging people to embrace it and try and use this new technology to their own advantage. I have a couple of talent questions that came in advance. We have one from James, and it's kind of a broader question, but you know, I'm interested in how you respond. What do you see to be some of the key skill sets that are required when we're thinking about this future kind of hybrid operating model to be successful?
Oh, let's see, flexibility and agility, I think mm-hmm. are the big ones that come to mind. I'll add analytical skills and relationship management. So flexibility and agility, this is actually an interesting thing, an interesting concept, because I don't think that has changed ever. I would say when procurement was order takers, we had to be flexible and agile and respond to multiple things, right? So imagine the procurement of the past was you had to manage multiple recs, mm-hmm. get multiple quotes, manage with multiple suppliers, you had multiple stakeholders, you had your inbox was very, very full, and all these things were due very, very quickly. You had to juggle them all, right? So you had to be flexible and manage multiple things at once. The new world, or the procurement operating model of the future, is also going to require flexibility and agility. But hopefully we're not managing multiple requests and things from the inbox to the outbox. And instead we're managing multiple data sets. We're managing predictive analytics. So we're looking at our spend pattern. We're looking forward to our spend forecast. So we're going from spend history to spend forecast. We're incorporating market intelligence and trends and forecasts on commodity prices or category prices, because our market intelligence is integrated into our predictive future spend pattern. And we're getting flags and notifications that say, hey, this is happening, you should take action. You should consider renegotiating your contract now before it expires, before the market is expected to go up 10%. I'm obviously making this up. So the new world is going to require a lot of flexibility and agility to interpret data from multiple sources and make informed decisions based on that. But now, is procurement going to be making those decisions? No, of course not. So procurement needs, I mean, in a vacuum, no. Procurement needs to work with the stakeholder to say, hey, look what I found. I think we should take this action. And so it's going to be this relationship management. So it's, you're flexible and agile to take a bunch of information. You're very analytical to understand what it means. And then you have this relationship management sort of skill to engage with the stakeholder, to take that information to them and recommend action, and then collaborate with them on what to do next.
So it almost feels like it's not, you know, the flexibility and agility you talked of that have always existed. That's not necessarily the changing skill set. The changing skill set is how we're positioning ourselves that with that agility and flexibility, we're driving business decisions, as opposed to, you know, making sure that a PO is placed at the right time so that, you know, a manufacturing plant gets what it needs. Right. And so it's the scope of the decision making that's changing and our ability to kind of influence that.
Yeah. And you know, this is the classic evolution from tactical procurement to actually providing strategic value. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people say tactical procurement was executing PREQs and writing contracts and change orders. Yes, it was. And a lot of people say strategic value is doing sourcing and category management. And I would say that's a small part of it. What mm-hmm. I just described really brings that strategic value home, right? It supports an overall category strategy. It's very informed based on market dynamics and internal needs. Forecast, not past, all of that.
I think of, it's funny, we call strategic sourcing, where I think that's still a very tactical process and mm-hmm. Not necessarily, you know, again, I don't know whether I should say this, but I feel like we've called it strategic to tell ourselves that we're being strategic, not necessarily that what we are doing through a sourcing process has a strategic impact on the business for the vast majority of things that we buy, because the strategy comes in somewhere else, whether it's the category management, whether it's understanding business needs, whether it's being able to bring something that didn't exist from the outside in. That's kind of where the strategy exists, not necessarily running a sourcing process.
You just totally aligned with one of my soapbox philosophies, which is strategic sourcing is not strategic unless you do those things, Phil, that you just mentioned to make it strategic. And I think we see this all the time, right? People apply a term and then do a lot of things underneath that term and say they're doing that, those activities are that term, and they're not. Like, we see a lot of bidding and people call it sourcing. All that, this happens every client, all the time, every single time. When was the last time that you guys sourced this category? Oh, we sourced it 6 months ago. You peel it back and you're like, what did you do? We extended the contracts.
Right.
Wait, I'm sorry. You extended the contracts and you're calling that strategic sourcing? Well, everything we do is sourcing. Ah, there's a problem.
One that's a little bit more situational. We have a question from Walter, but also I believe from Jared asked something similar to Kelly just throughout the session in the Q&A. Walter says that our procurement department has just started a huge transformation process. The current team members have been with the company for a number of years. They've got used to processing a lot of the spot orders, you know, having deadlines as being the most important parts of the job. So some of that tactical things that we just talked about. We're working to drastically reduce the number of transactions we process so we can free up their time to become more of a trusted advisor. So moving from the tactical to the strategic. The question that Walter has is, does that team typically have what it takes to transition from their current role into a new role? Or are you advising clients that they need to be looking for a different type of procurement professional to fill those roles?
Oh man, that's a big question. And there's a lot within this question. And I won't talk about the transformation concepts and the sequence that you should change an organization, because that's exactly where my head went on how do you go from tactical to strategic. There are set steps you need to take, but that's not the question. So I'll hold that for another conversation. I think the fundamental reason we're talking about this exact issue year after year after year after year is that there is no training. So, you know, we do these assessments. We assess procurement organizations against different dimensions of value. And one of them is one of the subdimensions is training. Mm-hmm. We see consistent lack of focus on training and development. There are no training funds. And we consistently see people in the wrong role. People are expected to all of a sudden convert from order takers to strategic thinkers.
Yeah.
They're expected, you know, maybe they had a career in administration and they, you know, promoted into procurement and they've been doing that now. And they're expected to all of a sudden, you know, build Excel models and understand commodity forecasts. There's for some reason a reluctance to train or replace those untrained resources. Now, being a people person, I say you always, to answer the question specifically, you always exhaust all options to train and upskill your resources first.
Yeah.
Period, end of story. Now, you know, I love the Jack Welch quadrant about performance versus mindset. If anybody hasn't seen that, I strongly suggest you look that up, because it shows that high performers with the wrong mindset are actually toxic to the environment and they'll bring it down. So there are exceptions to this, to what I just said about training and skilling, because you might find one group of people or specific quadrant to be toxic to the organization in general. But I would say we need rigorous training for procurement resources. And I'm going to flip something that I think a lot of people believe is true. I'm going to suggest that training be organized from the bottom up, not the top up. So when we do procurement transformations, we're often driven or requested to train on the high strategic viewpoint first, give me the vision, and then we'll drill down from there. So let's give me this category strategy, category management training. Then we'll drill down into sourcing. Then we'll drill down into from there. I think that's backwards. Yeah. What we find much, much more successful is that you train at the fundamentals, like literally procurement 101, then negotiation, then analytics, then sourcing, then category management, then and build people up, so that they actually can build their foundation stronger and stronger as they go. And I think that's going to be, you're going to find fundamental success if you do that.
Yeah, that compound effect. of the training as well. So you can go and put it into practice quickly rather than learning abstract topics that you may not be able to understand. I actually have a follow-up, but I want to ask Betsy if you had anything else, any other thoughts or anything to add on what Conrad just shared about kind of the people side of things.
Yeah, I the one thing that I was thinking of is, you know, how many, you know, either if you're a service provider, how many times have you heard a client say this? Or if you're a practitioner, how many times have you felt this? But I've heard so many people say, you know, yesterday I was a sourcing manager and today I'm a category manager, but my job didn't change. And, you know, so we consistently do this to ourselves where we put people in roles. We try to redefine the roles without really addressing the underlying skills. And so, you know, one thing that we haven't talked about too much is the soft skills and, yeah. You know, the fact that, I mean, you've got to be an influencer, you've got to be persuasive, you've got to be able to tell stories, you've got to be able to, you know, really, you know, deal with conflict. And, you know, those are things that, you know, to a lot of people who have been maybe like processing contracts for 10 years, that doesn't come naturally. And so I think the two things are, one, take a hard look at who you're considering for those roles. Do they have any of those skills? Because it is a complex skill set when we're talking about the analytical piece and also the relationship side. But then also, you know, what are you willing to invest? I do think it's possible. I had a client once tell me, I don't believe in upskilling. And I'm like, well, then why are we here? Why don't you just fire everybody and, you know, we'll get on with our day. I do believe it's possible, but I do think that, you know, to Conrad's point, this has been a big area of underinvestment for years and years. And not only that, it's been a big area of failure to follow up and failure to then implement. You know, you do this great procurement training, you go back to your desk, you're all excited. And then like Monday comes and you've got this huge pile of, you know, recs that come in and you're like, oh, I got to go deal with all this. And, you know, 3 months go by and you forget everything you learned. Yeah. So I think there's also a role for kind of the ongoing enablement refresher. You know, it's not just a one-time exercise.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a couple of things that I wanted to add about giving people a chance. You know, when I've done procurement transformations, you know, it's really easy for you to come in, especially when you're doing a transformation, and say, all the old is bad, I got to bring in all this new. And you know, you just do a complete kind of change. And I've seen people do that, and I've seen it be very expensive, and I've seen it not necessarily work. You know, there's a lot of people that will be existing in your current team that you've asked to do a certain role. And so that's why they're doing it, but they do have the capability to do more. And it's more about giving them the inspiration, the tools, the safe space, everything that comes with it to give them that opportunity. You know, if they can't, then you got to make some decisions. But don't just assume because they weren't doing something well before that they're not going to be able to do it well in the future. And that bottom-up side, you know, you were talking about is, as you think about, you know, we talk to a lot of procurement leaders. We see a lot of survey results. Time and time and time again, people are talking about the perception of procurement being a difficulty and a challenge for them. And a lot of the perception of procurement is driven from the things that we would consider being really tactical and their experience of dealing with procurement on a very tactical level. So that's because we're just making their life hard, and when they want to go and buy that stapler or whatever it may be. And it's really easy again to go to that top of like, I want to focus on the really strategic things and the vision and everything. But if they're not going to change the perception of what it's like to work with procurement on the bottom, you're never going to get anywhere at the top, or you may not, at least at scale. So focusing on the bottom things, as you said, Conrad, to get, whether it's process, whether it's people, whether it's bringing in technology to enable it, whatever it is, the quicker we can do that so that stakeholders have a smooth experience of their day-to-day is going to enable you to do the things that you want to do to continue to up-level kind of the impact of procurement. Now, I know we've only got 9 or 10 minutes left. So Kelly, I'm going to come to you one last time in a moment, but I do have a question on just generally about transformation. And we got this question from a number of different people in advance, including from Elizabeth. We have a question from Deepak, which is along the same lines. As we're thinking about the impact and the role of procurement, you know, how can we consider when we're thinking about the model to make sure that we're focusing on value beyond savings, like taking in other value levers? Now, should we be focusing on savings first and then building upon that? Or do you build something from the off when you're doing a transformation that is more of a broad, that takes a broader approach to the value levers that we can pull for the stakeholders and for the business?
Well, I, you know, in my experience, I think we all think that we would like to talk about things more grand mm-hmm. and more strategic and more innovative. But if you don't talk about savings in the right language, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So the when you said, Phil, do you start with savings and build from there? The answer, I think, is unequivocally yes.
Yeah.
So you've got to build business and finance alignment. So procurement provides the bridge between those two. So finance wants budget controls, maybe savings, maybe, I don't know, depending on the
risk aversion, whatever. Site. Yeah.
The business wants to do more work and do it better. The business, if there's a budget issue, it's usually driven by finance. Finance is coming and saying, hey, I need more money out of your budget, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to be able to bridge that gap and help those two bridge that gap. You have to define savings in a way that is defensible and real. It has to be hard savings driven. It has to be 1 year budget cycle. You asked about how procurement found us. Well, this question takes me back about 20 something years to a client that had tracked savings for every contract term and in aggregate and in a cumulative way. And pretty soon, if they kept doing that, their savings would exceed their budget.
Right.
And very, very quickly, everybody thought the savings calculation and the savings discussion was complete nonsense.
Yeah.
And so we saw shortly after that a complete readjustment and realignment to hard savings 1 year annual. Okay, so that's table stakes. You have to do that. That doesn't mean you ignore the other stuff like, hey, I got warranty included at no price. I extended, you know, I got training included for free. Like those other soft value added elements are still critically important and they can be wins for procurement. And so we absolutely have to continue to focus on those, but not at the expense of savings. Mm-hmm. But now let me take it to the next step and say most successful procurement organizations focus on procurement enabled innovation. So they take it a step further and say, focus on things like innovation partnerships, revenue deals. These are complex and different types of procurement. When you buy a revenue deal, you're actually not buying revenue, right? When you buy a widget, you buy a widget. You spend money to get something. Well, a revenue deal, you actually write a contract to get money. Now procurement is actually delivering revenue and value to the company that's very different than just a cost center. Mm-hmm. So we've seen organizations have a separate category procurement group that's focused on those. We've helped build like procurement operational dashboards that celebrates and highlights those. So that's, I think, where you go. So hopefully I answered the question. Fundamentally, you got to focus on savings.
Yeah.
But then take it from there.
And given where we are for time, Betsy, I want to come to you just to ask if you have anything to add to that, or whether we should go to the questions one last time.
No, I think Conrad captured right. Everything I would have said.
Kelly, do we have one last question from the audience?
Yes, we do. And Betsy, let's start with you. Okay. So Jonathan actually asks a very interesting question. Let's say your procurement organization has made an operating model change. How do you know if you've chosen the right model versus if you need to make some adjustments? Is it a matter of KPIs? Do you survey stakeholders? Are there sort of feelers you can put out into the organization to informally figure it out? How would you say procurement can validate their choice of operating model?
Well, I love this question because it allows me to get back up on my soapbox. and I think, you know, it's kind of a curious question because it almost implies that procurement changed its operating model like completely within the four walls of procurement and didn't involve anybody else in the design or implementation of that model, which I would say is a bit of a red flag in terms of whether or not it's going to be successful. So, you know, one of the things that was asked early on that I thought was a great question is, you know, should procurement operating models just, should it just be kind of like, you know, behind the curtain to a stakeholder? And, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about for that question is the most important thing is that people know who to contact and how. And I think, you know, that's right, that's relevant here, because so the short answer is all of the above. I mean, I think you need to measure, you know, you need to survey, you need to do roadshows, you need to go out and meet with your stakeholders and get their input and ask them to, you know, you can even create like an anonymous means for them to submit, you know, hopefully compliments. But, you know, if they have issues, almost like a virtual suggestion box, I think you need to do all of that. I mean, at the end of the day, procurement is a service-oriented organization. We are here to serve the needs of the business. And the more we can do that and the more transparent we are about that, I think the better connected we'll be. So I think, yes, you need to do all of that. But I mean, to even kind of back it up a step further, I'd say definitely you need to involve the business in the creation of this model, whether it is just simply saying to them, hey, look, we've got a few different ways that we could structure the team that's going to engage with you. Let's talk about the pros and cons of each and which ones we think make sense. You know, let's talk about the technology investments. I think having, you know, involving the business to some degree in the upfront design of that model will give you a much greater chance of success than if you say procurement is doing this to you, which is like the worst thing in the world. So hopefully that answers the question. I would say all of the above, but definitely, you know, do some of the groundwork beforehand to make sure we're getting the input from the business.
So I'm going to sneak in one very last question with the, I don't know, 30 seconds that we have left. And this is to you, Betsy. It's a question that we had from Saheb. What tends to be the biggest roadblock for procurement when making substantial change? What do we really need to be cognizant of overcoming? If that's even a question you can answer in you know, a 30-second window.
Yeah, I'll be brief on this one. Although it's another soapbox, so if I get too crazy, let me know. I mean, I think definitely making the case for change. I think, you know, procurement tends to be underfunded. That's just the reality. And as a result, we underestimate change management. And it's one of the very first things that I think people start to trim back on when they are, you know, looking to make a transformation, whether it's digital or process or both. So, you know, I think, you know, you need to consider how's the change being communicated, what sort of support exists for the change outside of procurement, which is a critical aspect, you know, what's in it for the business users. And I'll leave you with, you know, one of my favorite sayings, which is no one cares about procurement until you try to change it. And so as soon as you introduce change, which nobody likes, you know, that you start to get that pushback. So I think involving people in that process and really focusing on change management as a real work stream, like a project in and of itself, I think is a much better enabler of success on any type of transformation.
I want to thank you for listening into today's episode of The Art of Procurement. To go deeper, including access to transcripts and actionable outtakes from the podcast, join the free level of our AOP Mastermind community. To learn more, go to artofprocurement.com/mastermind. And to find our entire back catalogue of almost 400 episodes, go to artofprocurement.com/podcast.